speed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 7th of February. That's right, I said it, February. Roll those R's. Roll those R's. Roll another one, just like the other one. I thought you were my friend. That's from an old song called Don't Bogart That Joint by the Isle of Man. Is that what that called? The Brotherhood of Man, or whatever it was. Lowell George was a part of that. Now, for those of you who don't know who Lowell George was, he was a great guitarist and a member of the group called Little Feet. He did some really good songs, like Fat Man in the Bathtub, which is a great song. Lowell George was, boy, he gained a lot of weight in 1 year, and then he died. He was a remarkable guitarist and really something. But Little Feet did some great. Oh, Atlanta was another one of their songs. Boy, I wish we could play music on this station. Although it might be just, me going, hi guys, this is Mo, and welcome. Yeah. It's going to be a show with a lot of cool music today. It'd be like that. Oh, have I introduced Squeaky, my chair? Squeaky, take a bow. You're probably asking why I don't get another chair. Have you seen chairs lately? I mean, they look like torture devices. They're made out of netting, and they have like things that you can kick out and take a nap, and they have little fans that go, and they have lights and ding dongs and dong dings and all sorts of things, like Frère Jacques, ding dong ding. We had to sing Frère Jacques in French class. Yes, I took French. I took French from the time I was in the 7th grade all the way into college. Took it for a couple semesters in college. And you're asking, Mo, can you speak French? The answer is no. See how I do that nasally? No. I cannot speak French, but I can do the accent a little bit, as did Pepe Le Pew. I suppose I could, Où est la toilette? That sort of thing. I would like a sandwich, just enough to have someone probably do terrible things to my food. I don't know. I can speak some Arabic. I can make my way through that. Egyptian colloquialisms, I'm good at those. Cursing in Arabic, cursing in Egyptian, probably not Arabic per se, because my dad was a master of the cussing in Arabic. Wait a minute. What am I doing today? I'm just rambling along, I should be riding high in the saddle. Not me. Horses and I, they don't necessarily like me. And my dad could ride a horse, I must admit. I was never so good at it. And horses would throw me, and they always threw me into cactus, or cacti, as it were. And I'm not sure how or why they did that. I guess they thought I was just not horse-worthy. I was not worthy of riding upon them. And so it was like, oh, here comes some cactus here. Throw this kid off into it. And I had friends who could ride bareback. And they would, they'd ride away. And they'd come back and they'd say, "It's your turn, Mo." And I'd say, "Is there any cactus around here?" They'd say, "No, no cactus." And I'd get on the horse and I'd go along and that horse would find cactus. Not sure how, but it was pretty remarkable. So I hope your February, I didn't roll it that time, because they rolled another one just like the other one. No, I don't do that anymore. I no longer, I haven't, my goodness, I haven't done anything like that in decades. In decades, you know. I don't drink, don't smoke, don't toke. I suppose I'm considered woke by some, but what the hoke? Nothing you can do. Just go along and you get old enough and you find you just don't feel like doing much of anything anymore. You know, say, "Mo, you want to go to this concert?" "Nope. No, but I don't want to be around a whole lot of people." "Why, those people are strange." As Jim Morrison put it so well, people are strange. When you're a stranger, faces look ugly when you're alone. You know? It's not that they're ugly. It's just they're just weird. The older you get, the weirder everybody gets. Not just young people or middle-aged people or old people. Just everyone looks at you like, "Whoa, what's wrong with you?" And then you realize you're the weird one. And you go home and you look at yourself. And I might have mentioned somewhere along the line I had to get a haircut. You know, it's not like it just happened. It's one of those things, you know. And get a haircut and you look at yourself and you think, "Oh my God, I look like a narc." That's the word I used, and I thought about it, and it's finally coming in a little bit, but I don't know what to do. I mean, it'll grow back, but I don't like it. I haven't had hair this short since I was like 3, and it's just not normal. It's not normal. Who said men have to have short hair? I'm sorry. I'm just being weird. Oh, is that the first time? That's the first time I've ever been weird. I have a cup of decaf here. Let me drink that. Not all of it. Just a cup. You know. And decaf, of course, is a misnomer. Because they say there's right about 3 millihunkadunkas, whatever they call them. I don't know if it's micrograms or milligrams or, you know, coffee grams of caffeine as opposed to 93. So it's better. So what is this show about? Well, it's kind of about my world because I live in a world that a lot of people don't live in. I live in the world of what I call metaphysics. The metaphysical world, the mystical world, mysticism. What is mysticism? Well, for me, everything is mystical and metaphysical. Why? Because that's just kind of where I live. I don't live in what other people call the normal world. And I don't think I ever have. There are people, for example, people who live with me, who just kind of shake their head and go, "Man, how does he do that? You know, why does he do that? Why?" But, you know, it has served me. I've done well. Getting old is kind of a trip. I like it. I actually do like it. I have a feeling that the older I get, except for, you know, some of the aches and pains and that sort of thing. But I was telling someone who, a friend of mine who's getting older, and he just can't stand it, but he was extremely active when he was young. He owned a bike shop. So he was out there biking like 3,000-4,000 miles a day. You know, he'd bike and he had calf muscles that looked like hot air balloons. You know, they were so built up, and he was just, you know, and he had the testosterone and now it's just a very different story. He's getting along and he's got these problems. And I said to him, I said, "You know what? I like this age because I finally caught up to it." I said, "I've always been kind of lazy and I've never really liked strenuous anything. Doesn't matter what it is. If it's strenuous, I'm just not into it. And I really like where I am now because I'm where I should be. It's where I should have been, you know, when I was about 14 because I didn't like to do anything. My mom would say, you go out and weed the garden. And I just hated it. Or go out and weed the gravel. Weed the gravel just seemed like the dumbest thing on the planet. But I'd go out and just, you know, just stare at those weeds and cuss at them. And they, you know, I'd try and pull them out and they'd break off. And it'd be like, you know, 1,000 degrees outside. And it was always in the summer. I mean, you never had to weed in the winter. I mean, that's why I like winter a lot better than summer. But yeah, I'm kind of right where I'm supposed to be now. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong at all. So how are you? You doing well? On this seventh day of February, Imbolc was just by on late February 1st into the 2nd. Yeah, I'll tell you a story about Imbolc. Now, Imbolc is a cross quarter day, and it's right around the beginning of the year, kind of. Well, not really the year, but you know, we're going to have the Chinese New Year coming up. I imagine it's pretty close. I mean, it's the first. I think it's. Is it going to be this? This on the 9th, because we have the new moon on the 9th. I should check on that, but I don't feel like it, you know. Feel free. If it's not the 9th, then it'll be the next new moon, which ought to be 2 weeks from the 24th. Will be the, yeah, I don't know. It'll be, we'll find out. But that's how that goes. So, I'm just a marvel of information, aren't I? So, Imbolc, which is reputed to mean in the belly. And, well, it turns out that my daughter is a wonder. She's a wonder. She's really pretty cool, and she's a wonder. Now, before she was born, my wife became pregnant. Now, that's how it goes, usually. There's a pregnancy, and then the child is born. There is a pregnancy, and then born. But what happened was I fell asleep on a couch watching TV. And I think my ex-wife and I both kind of dozed off watching something, and I had a dream. And in that dream, I may have told this story before. If I have, just stop me. So, and this is why my world is so fascinating to me. So, might have been an old Tarzan, doesn't matter, Mo, just go on. So, watching and sleeping, and in this dream, here was this girl who came to the house and opened the door and said, Daddy, you know, and I said, yeah, and she was, 17, 18, 19 years old, right about there, and she was very nervous, and she had a boy with her. About the same age, and he looked much more nervous than she did. And she came up to me and she put her arms around me and gave me a hug, and I knew that this was my daughter, and she was really pretty. She was beautiful. And my heart just melted. And I looked into her eyes and she said, I want you to meet someone. I thought, oh boy. But her eyes were outstanding. They were this incredible blue. And around the pupil was a ring of gold. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And boom, I'm just wide awake. And I immediately woke my ex-wife up and I said, we're going to have a daughter. What you have in you is a girl. And she said, oh, you can't know. I said, I do know that. You have a girl and said, we're going to have a daughter. So, and she was like, oh, blah, 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 you know. So, sure enough, we were in the, she had to have cesareans, my ex-wife, and so we were in the operating room, and there we were, and she opted to be put out, because the first one she was awake, and that was, you know, a bit tough. I don't blame her, actually. And they pulled out just the head, and I said, it's a girl. And the doctor said, "You cannot know that." I said, "Look at that face. That's a girl right there." And he pulled her out. He said, "I'll be doggone. It is a girl." And sure enough, she was a girl. And of course, you know, the eyes don't really come to be what they are right away. So I looked at those eyes and they were that dark, you know, real dark blue that they always start out. And, but boy, I tell you what, after about 6 months, one day I was sitting, and I used to sit in my chair, my big chair. It did not creak, I will add, and it was even being held together with duct tape. And that's nothing against you, creaky, nothing against you. But I was sitting there, and my son would sit on my right side. He was 2 years older, and my daughter on my left. And they were sitting there, and I looked at my daughter, and I suddenly realized, holy mackerel, her eyes had that golden ring around the pupil, and they were blue, just this beautiful. And I'd never noticed it completely, but there it was. Never noticed it before, actually. And to this day, she has that beautiful, those beautiful eyes. Well, she's beautiful all over. She's just a gorgeous, and she's a wonderful person, and brilliant. So is my son. He's brilliant, too. But she has those eyes I saw in that dream. And she doesn't look the same as the girl in the dream, but she's every bit as wonderful. And I think there's something very mystical about that. It's like she came to visit me and said, "Look, I'm coming, man. I'm coming, and I want you to remember me, and I'm going to have this distinctive feature." Now, that is wonderful. And the point is, she was born on Imbolc. She was born on Imbolc. So, a few years ago, she happened to get pregnant. And of course, we all know how that comes about. And so she said, "Do you want to meet us at, here for lunch?" And I said, "Why, sure, I'm happy to do that." And she was not very far along. And I looked at her, and she was big. And she said, "Boy, I said, "Well, Imbolc." And I didn't say this out loud, but I thought Imbolc means in the belly, and it's about fertility. It's a fertility thing, you know. It's about, this is a very fertile month. And I said to her, "You, my daughter, are going to give us twins." And she said, "Don't say that." And I said, "It's okay, you know, it's okay." And sure enough, twins. This is the world we live in. If you pay attention to the signs, if you pay attention to what's going on around us, you will never be led astray or awry, or sourdough. I like sourdough too, but I love rye. I love sourdough too. But the thing is, that's the wonder of life. That's the wonder and the beauty of it. There is so much to learn. There is so much to see. There is so much to be a part of. All you have to do is kind of open up, you know? And boy, are those twins cute. Oh my goodness. That's what getting old gets you. Grandkids, you know? Life is such a wondrous mystery, and I will pass on at some point, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm not like, "Here, bring it on," you know, that's not what I'm talking about, but it's going to happen, and they will grow up, and they will pass on whatever I have given them to their kids and their grandkids, and that will happen all the way into the future. I mean, I think back to what I've been given, what I was given by my mom and dad and by their moms and dads. And it's pretty phenomenal when you think about it. I mean, I'm the first kid in my family for thousands of years to have been in this country, you know, to have been outside. Well, my mom, you know, she was very fair complected. I mean, really, 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 really fair complected. And it was a big secret. She told my sister finally where that came from. I mean, my kid brother has blue eyes, you know. And it's like, wow, how'd that happen? Mine are green. And it turned out that there was someone Swedish in the family. My grandfather was 6'2". I was 6'2" before back surgery, 6'1 and a half, something like that. And I never stand up straight. My wife keeps saying, how come you're shrinking? And it's like, well, because on top of being lazy, I don't have very good posture, you know? So life is truly phenomenal. It is a wondrous thing. It's a wondrous thing. Grab it, man. Grab it. I talked about Melanie last week and how sad I was at her passing, but boy, did she leave a lot of information in the form of music. There's a lot of information in music. My generation, we baby boomers, I like to think we're kind of a love generation, love and peace. Not all of us. Certainly not all of us. Not all of us. But she wrote some really cool songs. There's one called The Living Bell. Ring the Living Bell, you know. And that's one to listen to because it's about, man, live. Live. Now, I don't know what she died of, but she was working on an album called Secondhand Smoke. And boy, that's a kind of a bummer if that's what got her. But we're all going to get got by something at some point. So you might as well ring the living bell and light the living light. That's a good song to listen to. It's a celebration of life. That's off an album that came out in 71. You know, so that's quite a while ago. I was a junior in high school in 1971, I think, or maybe I was a senior. I don't know, I graduated in 72. So yeah, I was a senior. At the same time, I was listening to Jethro Tull, you know, Aqualung album, and listening to The Grateful Dead, you know, and I mean, I was listening to a lot of stuff, but I was also listening to her. And my friends were like, well, you listening to that for, man? I said, because I love that stuff. I love, you know, and you listen to music, and I don't care what you listen to, it defines you a little bit. I was very angry for a while in my life. I was a really angry guy because I was in a relationship that did not turn out to be what I hoped it would be. I think we've all been there, haven't we? We've all been in a relationship that did not measure up to what we hoped to. I was a hopeless romantic, and I still am hopeless. And hopefully that at some point, you know, you kind of say, well, wait a minute, maybe that's not so bad. Maybe it's not so bad being a massive idealist, because you're always striving for the very best that something can be. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's a good thing to always want the best that something can be. And people say, oh, but then you have unrealistic, desires, and you have unrealistic, you can't be ever be perfect. And I don't want perfection. That's not what I ever seek. Perfection is creepy. You know, perfection is really nerve-wracking. But I have a belief I believe in love. And I believe in peace. And I think that those two ideals are possible. And so those are very high, lofty ideals. And I will not look lower than there. And so, you know, Mark Husson, who does this, right? I'm going to, he put out a postcard. And I want to read from this because this is smart stuff, you know? He said, hello, friends. We are 7 days into the love month, so you are going to hear a lot about this topic, but don't dismiss it too readily. Love has a hard time getting good representation. He says, I had a thought, don't faint, which, as we are being flooded with hearts at every turn, let's use them. Let's make every heart we see as a symbol of gratitude in our life. For example, if you see 7 hearts in a day, you know you were reminded of 7 wonderful things in your life. You don't have to know what they were specifically, just that you are being reminded of the gifts surrounding you. Even on the days when you are struggling to feel anything positive, if you see a heart, you'll know a part of you sees something wonderful in your life. Right? Man, I think that that is really, really good. Now, that, to me, is just this side of brilliant. You know? Maybe it is the other side of brilliant. I don't know what that means. Just this side of brilliant. You know? It's every side of brilliant. It's really pretty wonderful. Because what it says is that there is this, all you have to do is look at it and say, man, this is exactly, I see a bunch of hearts, and it's saying you're grateful. Be grateful. Why wouldn't you want to be grateful? And we're going to see a lot of hearts between now and next week. Now, next week on this show, it's going to be Valentine's Day. I have had a bit of a gripe about Valentine's Day for years and years and years and years, because it's really such an artificial stress thing. I'm sure most of you, or many of you, would agree. Now, it can be a lot of fun for people if the circumstances are right. I've never had a lot of fun on it. Maybe I'm just atypical, but it's just so weird. Have you tried to go out to dinner on Valentine's Day? You know, it's like going into battle. I've tried. Used to try years and years ago. And it was just like, even if you have a reservation, but if you don't have a reservation, it's like you're going to eat at maybe midnight if the place stays open that long. And it's always very weird, and it's stressful, and it's this kind of artificial thing. And is it about romantic love, or is it about platonic love, I don't think it's ever about that. And it's St. Valentine, who was beheaded, and he was marrying centurions, or what the heck is the deal? And is that what it's really about, or is it about Lupercalis? Do you know what Lupercalis is? Well, Lupercalis was a holiday in ancient Rome. February is the month of cleansing, and the word Febreze comes from that word, which means to cleanse. So Febreze and February have the same basic idea. So next time you're spraying Febreze somewhere, think, oh, February. I'm cleaning up something. And so February is, you can come to your own conclusions there. But the festival of Juno who was the wife of Jupiter, right? She was all about monogamy, which is, and of course that would be Hera in Greek, and whose husband Zeus was really not very monogamous. He was a notorious philanderer. And I think that's really kind of fascinating, because Zeus, right? You know, like Deus, of course. But Zeus was just, he would look at anybody and say, and it didn't matter if they were man, woman, or child. Yes, that's right. That was pretty common back then. In their mythologies. And to mate with Zeus was essentially to be destroyed. Now, if not by Zeus, in the moment, like he would take the form, that's a very good-looking lady. I think I'll take the form of a lightning bolt. Hey, there's a rather fetching lad. I think I'll take the form of a Mack truck.
what the heck? But that's the type of thing in their mythologies. And it was one way of describing how really bad things happen to good people, or, of course, infidelity. So someone, you know, a woman would be with a guy like a king, and she would become pregnant, and it would be, well, it must be Zeus. And then the other side of that was that Hera was a just incredibly vindictive wife. And boy, Doug, oh my God, she would do incredible things. And I've always said that Zeus was immediate trouble, immediate rectifications for whatever went wrong. But that Hera, her problems, her trouble lasted for generations. She would take it out, usually not on the person who had the affair with Zeus. Never an affair. Well, let's call it what it was. It was usually rape. And then she would take it out on the family for generations to come. And what a dismal way to look at the deities there. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. But it's kind of a fascinating thing. Now, the Romans weren't quite that harsh. They could put that on Jupiter, but not so much. So Juno, she was very monogamous. And so there was this time where there was this real big, you know, festival of Juno, and which celebrated monogamy and marriage. And the Lupercalis was on the 14th, right? And what that was the celebration of the wolf, the Lupercalis. So because wolves are one mate animals, like geese. You've seen that where a goose, you know, I was in a parking lot once, and there was a goose that decided that my car was going to take the place of its mate, which had passed, which had died. And so I had a very hard time getting into my car, nevertheless driving away in my car. It was sad, very, very sad. And apparently I don't know what the deal was. But so this idea of the 14th, because it was the day before the big Ides of the month, being the middle of the month, which used to be the full moon. Now that's all changed, of course, blah, blah, blah. So on the Lupercalia, it was the celebration of marriage and monogamy and marital happiness. And it was customary for couples who were married to celebrate their marriage. And they would be lauded by the government, by the Roman government. And, you know, no one dared go out with their mistresses or anything like that, and which was very common in Rome for the most part. They were definitely a lot like us in many, many ways. But it was celebrated. And that's what the real beginnings of Valentine's Day was about. So, there you are. It wasn't about chocolates and, you know, outfits and waitresses and, not waitresses, well, waitress outfits and maids and stress. I mean, when did all the stress come into it? I don't know about you. I mean, frankly, my wife and I don't make a big deal out of it. We did for a while, trying to outdo each other with fancy cards, you know, that we made. And then it became so stressful, we just said, let's knock this off. This is not what it's about. And so now we just, you know, yeah, happy V-Day, you know, or VD. Happy VD. And that's about the end of it, because you get to a point where it's like, this is really artificial. I believe you should be able to show some kind of emotion every day. You know, shouldn't you be able to tell people in your life how you feel about them every day? You know, one of the things someone asked me one day, why our generation has spoiled our children so much. And that goes back to Melanie again about a song she wrote called Good Book. And I mentioned this last week, but I'm going to talk about that for a second. Why did our generation... Now, someone said to me once, an older feller,
He said, you're snotty kids, you know, you snotty kids, you were raised with everything. Now, my generation, you know, properly called the greatest generation, we saved the world. We saved the world from tyranny and the Nazis. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I respect that, and I respect your part in that, but your generation also was the tyranny and that, right? He said, oh, you're a wise guy, aren't you? I said, well, yeah, I am. I mean, I said, but you had to protect us from you. And luckily, you were there to do that. He said, oh, yeah, you're just one of those guys. He said, now, why did you expect that you could grow your hair long and do all that? I said, I didn't expect anything. It just happened. And how did your generation react? Well, that's what Good Book is about. It's a song, if you're interested in what it was like to be around then, it's something you might be fascinated in. Because the song basically, at least to me, and of course that's the beauty of music, you can listen to lyrics or read poetry or read a novel for that matter, and it means something different to everybody. But when Melanie said that she cried when she wrote the lyrics, and I read that just last week in an interview she gave, I got it, because I cried the first time I heard it, and the subsequent 7,000 times I listened to the songs, because it still gets to me. Because the first time, when 1968 at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, when I saw policemen beating students who were just a few years older than I was, just two or three, well, about three or four, just beating them, beating the snot out of them, I was so enraged that I was near the point of screaming in anger, but there were tears, hot tears of rage streaming down my cheeks. And I'll never forget that. As my father came downstairs into the basement where I was watching TV, and he said, what are you watching? I just turned around and started cussing. I'd never cussed in his presence or my mom's presence before. And I said, why do you hate us? And I really had this impression that our parents' generation hated us. And that was ingrained in me, that our parents did not love us. And as I freaked out, which is where the term comes from, when you become a freak, when you grow your hair out or you just change the way you think. And a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but those of us who were there and who lived it, and if you happen to be, an oddball, whatever that means, if you happen to be different in any way and you didn't hide it, then you know what I'm talking about. There were two ways for it to go. It was for a parent to say, I love you no matter who you are or what you are. That's all there is to it. I made that decision with my kids. I don't care who they are or what they are. I love them to pieces. And I will love them thick or thin, no matter how it goes. But that wasn't everybody. And it certainly wasn't our case. Well, I didn't know many who were like that. I knew more parents who were mean to their kids, who, for no reason that I could figure out. Now, maybe that was the experience of the generation before, the Andy Hardy generation, what I call it. Those kids who grew up and wore their parents' clothes, you know, who wore the hats that their parents wore and dressed like them and went to the local hop. And you know, they may have done the jitterbug, but they still were kind of like their parents. And they drove the old jalopies, and they, you know, but it was all yes, sir, no, sir. It wasn't far out, man. You know, it was different. We, and I say we, including me and my tribe, and there was a huge tribe, my friends. Was it a huge tribe? We,
had at least one parent at home who did not like us, who did not trust us, who may have been afraid of us in some way, but wanted to change us back into what they imagined we were at one time. Now, I was never compliant. I was never exactly what I was supposed to be. Were you? Were you always what you were supposed to be? See, because I never was. I never was easy. I questioned from the very beginning. I would ask why. And sometimes that question of why was met with a slap in the face, you know? Not my dad. He was more calm. But he also didn't necessarily step in and say, don't. Don't. Don't do that. Don't, you know? This kid has got his own mind. Now, a few times he would step in and say, listen. But I think he was kind of like, what's the world going to be like for this boy? If he doesn't learn to conform, if he doesn't learn to step in time, if he doesn't learn to do what's expected of him. And in school, man, did I have trouble in school, because I didn't like it. Trouble with authority, they would say. Doesn't listen in class, talks too much, you know? And it wasn't that I wasn't necessarily... I was probably loved quite a bit, but I didn't feel loved. And that's kind of the gist of the song, you know. Write the poet a poem and the singer a song, but please tell us you love us so we don't feel alone. Man, did I feel alone. So we did what people who feel alone do. We glommed together. We found one another. And we were each other. You know, she has a line in Candles in the Rain, Lay Down. You know, we bled inside each other's wounds. What a great line. We bled in, we were so close, we bled inside each other's wounds. We were wounded. And I know that sounds simpering, and I know that sounds self-something, self-serving, self-whatever, but we were in pain. We were in pain. We were in pain because we knew that we weren't loved. We could feel it when you went into a grocery store. We were just ourselves, you know? We were just being who we were. But when you went into a grocery store and people followed you or watched you or glared at you or gritted their teeth in hatred, man, but it was a time of beauty because you just loved everything about being alive, and you loved humanity, and you wanted to help, and you wanted peace to be the main thing that came of life. And you wanted love. You wanted to share love. And I'm not talking about sex, because I didn't have any of that. I mean, it took a while, you know? That's a misguided thought. There were people maybe who had a lot of it, but I didn't. It wasn't like, you know, handing out candy canes at Christmas time. It didn't happen that way. Maybe for some it did, but not for me. It was about the feeling of camaraderie and the feeling of being one with this entire generation. I'll never forget. You would just flash the peace sign to someone and they would flash it back, and you'd get this rush. Man, we are the same. We are one. And we believed, and we had hope. So when we would go home, it was this entirely, it was a heavy feeling. It was a heavy darkness, because it was constant nagging and constant darkness. And when are you going to get a job? And yes, I did have a job, but it wasn't the right job. And when are you going to, you know, why are you taking these classes? Why aren't you going to be a doctor? Why aren't you going to do? And it was like It didn't matter what you did. You know, why is your hair so long? Why are you growing a beard? Why is your beard so long? Why are you da-da-da-da-da-da-da? And it didn't always have to mean anything, you know? And, yeah, I'd say, Dad, what's going on here? He'd say, your mom is just worried about you. I'd say, that's not how it feels, you know? So you'd sit back and you would just think about your life. And yes, we experimented with stuff. And yes, because we were looking for answers that didn't come from the Andy Hardy movies anymore. The movies we saw were things like Easy Rider, you know. We saw a lot of really weird stuff. They made stuff that was weird. But the main thing we wanted was to feel accepted and to feel loved. And we weren't getting it. We weren't getting it. We went to school. Luckily, I managed to work it out with my family. And I eventually, you know, my dad moved. He went to Louisiana. And I went down there. And trust me, I had to tie my hair back. I didn't cut my beard. But I had to look differently or I would have been, you know, in a world of hurt. I actually wore my hair down once the entire time I lived there. And I wasn't sure I was going to make it home alive on campus. It was like, whoa, who is this freak? You know, just to see what would happen. It was an experiment that was frightening. But going through that, so many of us, this time when, and I had friends, I wasn't the only one. I'm not saying poor me, trust me. It was enlightening. I had friends. I had a friend who, beautiful guy, man. Beautiful guy, lovely fellow. He used to get beat up at school. He got beat up at school. He grew his hair long. The school principal said, you've got to cut your hair long. He took him into his office. He said, I'm not going to cut my hair. And he said, if you don't, I will. And he said, but then he told him off. And so he gave him the board, you know. And that caused almost a lawsuit. So he went to the other school in town. And these guys beat him up. And beat him up, and he had to go to, you know, I lived in Fort Collins, which is a college town in northern Colorado. He had to come to finish high school in Denver. And his life kind of spun out of control. His father hated him so much, so much. And just a lovely guy. Always found him to be very spiritual. He and I were close friends. And from the time about, you know, grade school. And lost track of him for years and years and years. Rough time. Now he's a bishop in a church, you know, and doing very well. You say, okay, that was his path. But it was a tough path, a tough road to hoe. A lot of my friends from that time, I'd go have dinner at their house, and their parents would just rake them over the coals, give them a hard time in front of me. And then I'd realize they were doing the same thing to me. They were just, and I don't know. It was a tough time. So when we had kids, I told my kids I loved them constantly. Several times a day, because I do love them. I still tell them. Every time I talk to them, every time I text them, I tell them I love them. Because I do love them. When I, you've got to tell people you love them. You have to. If you love somebody, tell them you love them. If you don't, then you are missing an opportunity that you may regret. When I talk to my sister or my brothers, I tell them I love them because I do love them. When I talk to an uncle and overseas, I tell him or my aunt, I tell them I love them. My cousins, I love you because I do. But if I don't love someone, I'll never say it. I dated a girl for a very short period of time who looked me in the eye and said, don't you ever tell someone you love them when you don't. She was a witch. And boy, did she figure me out fast. She was wonderful. She taught me some things. And she meant it. She said, don't you ever tell someone you love them when you don't. And that was advice that I have held on to my whole life. You know, bless her for that. But that may be why my generation, we did spoil our kids, you know? We did. But I don't think they're spoiled. Maybe they're spoiling their kids, maybe not, but they're passing on the love. What's wrong with love? I don't. Now, giving things away too easily, that's one thing. That's a bad thing because then people don't want to work for it. I've worked hard for everything I've had. I've been used like a rag in a bar. But the bottom line is, as long as I've helped somebody, I'm glad I've done it. You know? I like Mark's idea. Every time you see a heart, imagine that it, just realize that it's telling you that there's something of gratitude there. That there's something to be grateful for in your life. I think that's a brilliant piece. You know? It's great. There's so much in life to be grateful for. Be grateful for the love in your life. If someone loves you, and I'm sure someone does, or if you love somebody, you know, I mentioned last week about the gematria, or a couple of weeks ago or whenever, and one of the words was, you know, he who is beloved, Ahab. That's my brother's name, Ahab, or Ehab. That's his name. And I called him up, and he's been sick for years because of COVID. And I said, buddy, this is your year, because it says so. 24, Ahab. This is your year. I hope you start to feel better and to get better. And it really kind of cheered him up. But he needs it. If you can help somebody, even through something as simple as a little numerology, or turning over a card, you know, or looking at a chart, or holding their hand and looking into their palm. People, even if they don't believe, inside something dings and they listen to it. Boy, shame on you if you look into that hand and say, oh, that's terrible. Man, that's not what this is for. This is to help people. Man, I've seen things that aren't great in people's lives. And I keep my mouth shut. You know, they ask for warnings. I give them a warning. But I do it in a way that is positive. And they'll say, I know there's more that you see there. And I tell them what to look for, to look out for. But give them a way around it. Don't just proclaim something doomed, you know? We are here to help each other. This tribe of ours, those of you listening to me, you're doing it for a reason. It isn't just because I'm some long-winded bag, and I am, long-winded bag of hot air. No doubt about that. I love doing this. But we're here to help each other. Without you knowing it, you're helping me by listening. There's a connection. You're, I hope, getting something from me. I was involved in a podcast thing, and financially, I didn't get a thing out of it. I know I'm probably not supposed to talk about that, so forget that. You didn't hear me say that. But I got so much out of it by the podcasts I did. And the fact that people listened to it, and I know people liked them, and I know they got something out of them. I had an old friend of mine that I hadn't talked to in decades who wrote me a note and said, man, I listened to these, and they really made sense to me. And I thought, then that's all I need. If I reach one person, then that's what it's for. I wrote a bunch of articles for Gaia, which I did get paid for, and it was pretty good, you know, I liked that, but But that's not what I got out of it. What I got out of it was people were reading them and getting a point of view that I thought was sane and not the regular old. Some of this stuff can be pretty crazily put out there. You see, we need to give people what is worth hanging on to, right? I think it's so important that we do the right thing. I really do. We're on this planet, well, kind of forever, but in the form that we can be active and do what we do for a pretty short period of time. You know, as Grateful Dead say, such a long, long time to be gone and a short time to be there. That's a fact, a short time to be there, here, right? Make use of it. And spread the love. Spread the love. That's the most important thing there is. What a beautiful time it was, and what a beautiful time this is now. All right. That's my time. And it's your time, too. Grasp it. Grasp it. Give it a big kiss on the lips. If it slips you some tongue, well, that's not so good. All right. Unless you like that. Hey, until next week, I wish you all peace and love, my friends. This is Mo. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. to those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but